Remember the recent headlines, the two runaway Middle Eastern women, one Saudi Arabian, Rahaf Mohammed Al-Qunun, taken in by Canada after fleeing what she said was an abusive family, the other Princess Sheikha Latifa bint Mohammed Al-Maktoum of Dubai, who tried and failed to escape that country last year. Here's why she said she wanted to leave.
There is no justice here. They don't care. Especially if you're a female, your life is so disposable.
Your life is disposable. That reminded us of another princess who made headlines four decades ago, Saudi Princess Michal bin Fahd Al Saud. In 1977, when she was 19, she was publicly executed alongside her lover, an event that was recreated in the 1980 British docudrama Death of a Princess.
She was just a black heap. They'd knelt her down, like, in front of the sand, and shot her. And then they blindfolded the boy.
And that boy, the young Khalid Mahalal, was also murdered. The film aired in the UK and then the US and created an uproar, strained international relations. It was a co-production with England's Associated Television Corporation and journalist Anthony Thomas, and PBS and WGBH Boston, and filmmaker David Fanning. Fanning went on to create Frontline. He's now executive producer at large and joins us in the studio. David, welcome.
Well, hello, Robin.
When these headlines surfaced recently, were you thinking the same thing we were?
Well, it's hard not to remember Princess Michal, who was executed in a parking lot in Jeddah because she had been accused of adultery. It was a story that actually surfaced in a British tabloid because a British construction worker who'd come back from work saw a crowd gathering and secretly put a small camera inside a pack of cigarettes and went out and took pictures of a gathering with a pile of sand, limos that appeared in one part of the square, a young woman brought out, veiled, of course, forced to kneel against the sand and shot in her head, and then the man who turned out to be her young lover was decapitated, and it set off a furor what happened. And there was an official Saudi version of why Princess Michal was executed, and that was that she had been divorced, had gone off to Lebanon, and had begun an affair. And when it was discovered, she admitted her adultery. That was the official story.
Well, along comes Anthony Thomas, a terrific reporter, who hears this story and decides to try to track it down. What is true? And so first, tell us that. Is it all true?
Well, that part of the story was not true. It turns out, indeed, it was Princess Michal, and she was executed. But she was executed on the orders of her grandfather. Her grandfather was Prince Mohammed, King Fahd's elder brother. He had disapproved of the behavior of the young royals in general, but specifically when Princess Michal's adultery was discovered, he ordered her execution.
Here's somebody in the film describing Princess Michal. Let's listen.
She wanted to live, to be happy, to sing, to love. And I think that, you know, when she weighed it out, she thought that if she carried on living the way they wanted her to live, you know, she would have also destroyed herself.
Well, the way they wanted her to live, let's take that up, because here again there's echoes of the young princess from Dubai who also in that video said, I wouldn't be able to choose my husband, and that's one of the reasons she fled. Princess Michal was in an arranged marriage. Her husband wasn't really around.
She'd been abandoned, and so she made contact with the young people in Riyadh. It was impossible for men and women who were not related to be together. But behind the doors of the boutiques, young people could meet. And she'd seen a young man apparently playing the guitar on television. And she met him in a boutique in Riyadh. And they fell in love. And they were determined that they would be together. And they were hoping that coming summer, they would go to meet in London, where the young people could, you know, wear jeans and drink champagne. And just as they were planning to meet in London, her grandfather, Prince Mohammed, laid down an order that all the young people would stay. So in an act of rebellion, she staged her suicide. She met the young man. She left clothes at a beach with the assistance of a servant, and they ran off together and then tried to escape the country.
Again, Anthony Thomas tried to, you know, pull this thread of this story that he heard. And as he started to travel through the Arab world, he realized it meant so many different things to so many different people. It had become almost mythological.
Well, everywhere we went, in fact, we met people who projected their own lives. A woman who had had an arranged marriage, or a woman who had run off with a man she loved who happened to be Christian, and her brother was sent to kill her. So it was a private journey into the inside world, life of the Arab world.
And one that officials in Saudi Arabia wanted to keep private. When this film was made, trade deals were threatened, huge uproar. Journalists in the United Kingdom wondered, did we do the right thing? PBS, huge controversy. We remember here when you also decided to air it on what was then World. Give us some context for how big this was.
Well, the acting Secretary of State, Warren Christopher, came to PBS to tell them that they should not run the film. Mobil Oil, then, in fact, the supporter of Masterpiece Theatre at WGBH, took out a full-page ad in the New York Times saying that PBS should not run the film. And I remember going in to my office with Peter McGee and Henry Becton, and we sat down together and said, there's a real chance that PBS may decide not to run this film. And we just want to make sure that our journalism is right. And I said, no, we've got the journalism right. We've told the story as it really is. And Henry then said, well, in case PBS folds, we've rented space on the transponder of the satellite and we'll put it up out of Boston to the whole system. And that's when I really knew. That was, in fact, the moment that Frontline was made, in a sense, because we could withstand those pressures. And, in fact, the film went out, the sky didn't fall, and the film was later proved to be accurate.
Well, and some would say the sky still hasn't fallen, and it should have. I mean, when you heard this recent story, did you find yourself thinking it's still happening? These young women were not executed, but we hear of women who are.
You know, the fact that this was 40 years ago and we'd heard about the conditions of this young woman being forced to stay in the women's palace and denied any right to meet and have a life, we thought it was medieval then. And the fact that all these years later, this is still happening is just shocking.
Yeah. You said you felt you had the journalism right. Are you sure of that? Because you know there were critics.
Yes, we've since had people confirm it, and there have been a number of people high inside the royal family who told us that the story is told in Death of a Princess.
Well, there was Penelope Mortimer, who worked on the film, and she said these stories were taken on the evidence of an expat divorcee, you know, the story about the lives of Saudi princesses, and no effort was made to check up on information. It's rumor, it's opinion. The audience gets conned.
Well, Anthony's first idea was that he probably needed to make this a fictional story because it was too hard to get people on the record. And so he set out to write a screenplay with Penelope Mortimer. And when he decided finally to step away from that, and he was unhappy with the – he got into a tiff with Penelope Mortimer. Yeah. So those arguments go back to that disagreement.
Well, David Fanning, you say people confirm the story of the princess. We also have – with our own eyes, witnessed the story of Jamal Khashoggi.
It's tragic.
Which our intelligence agencies believe the Saudis sent a hit team to murder him and cut him up. I mean,
if not Mohammed, under the orders of Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah. We would say to people, this film is so instructional, rush and see it. But it's very hard to see it. In the UK, it wasn't broadcast again until a private screening in 2009. It was rebroadcast by you on Frontline in 2005 for the 25th anniversary. We did find it on YouTube. Have you thought about re-releasing it?
Well, we could, and we would might look at it again and see. It was an enormous event when it was broadcast in 1980. It was the highest rated film at the time in public television history. And when it went out in 2005, it didn't have quite the same impact.
Why do you think that is, David Fanning? Do you think we've just – there's an acceptance of
– Yes, I think there is an acceptance. Yeah. I think there has been a sort of acceptance of Saudi Arabia's role as an ally in the country and a reluctance on people in general to disturb and ask hard questions of the kingdom. What we're seeing now, though, is a is a time in its life when, with the prosecution, there's terrible war in Yemen, people being held in a hotel in Riyadh. This is a time of evaluation about Saudi Arabia and its role in the civilized world.
By the way, you and I, and I'm sure many others were thinking of this princess with the recent headlines. I'm wondering, I mean, did you ever pick up anywhere that these young women, these current princesses, are aware of her story?
They might indeed know. You know, in Saudi Arabia, they still remember death of a princess. We've had teams in Saudi Arabia ask why Frontline rebroadcast death of a princess in 2005. It's still a famous story in the Middle East.
And I'm sure a frightening one to you.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. David Fanning of Frontline speaking to us about the 1980 docudrama he co-produced with England's Associated Television Corporation and journalist Anthony Thomas, Death of a Princess. If you can find it, do. David, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.